Oh my god, an insane goal!
The game's gone mad.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of The Game's Gone Mad with me, Olivia. Today we'll be working out which club is having the best transfer window, joining Alex Morgan in spilling the tea about England's defeat in the World Cup, and the biggest news story of our generation, Bellerin's haircut.
The game's gone mad.
This week, I am back with the first team. Pete, welcome back.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Wow.
Hello, Patrick, you're back as always.
Jesus Christ, it's so brutal this week.
So our opening topic this week is, as always, in this period of the year, transfer news. But I want to know who you boys think is having the best transfer window.
Ooh.
Patrick, do you want to kick us off?
I think Juventus are probably in with a shout. Juventus seem to be doing good business right
especially now. Especially if they get De Ligt as well.
Yeah, De Ligt, Rabiot on a free.
Ramsey on a free.
Ramsey on a free is a lot of money. Yeah. I know, that's why I'm on the I think they're going to lose Cancelo. So this is the thing, like, every person I want to, every team I go towards, I then find something that I don't like. Mm-hmm. So you know, like, Dortmund did really good stuff, then brought in Hummels for nearly 40 mil. I think that's silly.
32?
Yeah, 31, 32. And Bayern as well. Like, Bayern have done really good stuff, but they also need forwards and they don't have one through the door yet. And that's troubling to me. Real Madrid are having a good window as well. They got in a centre-back, which they needed. They brought in Ferland Mendy, which is a great signing. Obviously Hazard, obviously Jovic. My only issue is, there's no way that Spurs should have got Tanguy Ndombele this season, especially given that he would have been perfect for Real Madrid. And so, unless they get in a midfielder, it's hard to say they've had a great window either. So,
but they're also strongly linked to Eriksen or Pogba.
Yeah, but I don't think either one of those is right for him. As great as they both are, I don't think that. I mean, I'd go for Pogba over Eriksen for Real. But
I think Eriksen's more likely.
I think so as well. But it's just really difficult to find a team who I think have just done, like, undeniably great business. I think Napoli look like they're going to have a good summer. They're currently trying to get Kieran Tierney. It looks like James Rodriguez has basically done it. It looks like Irving Lozano is quite a long way down the road as well. The only thing was then letting Amadou Diawara go to Roma. I mean, like, everybody's just like...
I think Spurs are in with a shot, to be honest, in that...
Having done one first team edition.
Well, 54 million points for Ndombele, who is pretty much double the player of Sissoko.
Oh, minimum.
Yeah, like, easily. Yeah. They're strongly linked to Sessegnon. They've also been linked to Lo Celso / Ceballos. What was his name? Danny Ceballos from Real Madrid. Potentially used as a make-weight if they lose Eriksen. I think if they get Sessegnon and one of those two, plus Ndombele...
And they're linked to Van de Beek as well.
Yeah.
God.
And also keep Alderweireld.
Do you think
they've actually had a really good window?
I think they need a backup forward still.
Oh, yeah, of course, because, well, Llorente's gone and Janssen is looking to go. And he's also terrible. So, yeah, they've got... their backup centre forward at the minute is Son, who is a winger.
What about Leicester, actually, as well? I don't like Ayoze Perez, though apparently it's 16 mil, not 30 mil.
Tielemans is 40 mil.
Tielemans is great. And if they end up getting 70 or 80 for Harry Maguire,
and
they've kept Chilwell as well, and it looks like they'll keep Ricardo Pereira, though Juve might come knocking. That's a pretty good window. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good window for Leicester. Except that they also brought in Lee Congerton, who is a dunce.
How Harry Maguire can go for 80 plus mil is filthy, considering De Ligt is currently touted at 75 million euros. Yeah. Van Dijk went 2 years ago for £75 million.
Oh my God.
Old slabhead Maguire, 90 million quid.
Do you think it's just because it's Man United?
Well, yeah. I think it's partly because... It's the same thing happened with Wan-Bissaka. 50 million for Wan-Bissaka, I think, even though he's had 1 year in the Premier League, it was a very good year. Mm. £50 million is probably on par.
He's so young.
Yeah, he's 21.
Yeah.
But again, you compare that to Trent Alexander-Arnold.
And he's brilliant.
Yeah,
Maguire is not brilliant.
He's a brilliant
he's good.
Defensive right back. But £50 million is probably on par for him because you need to equate for the homegrown tax that evidently exists and also the inflation that Manchester United get with every single transfer. Everyone just tags on an extra £5, £10, £15 million because they know Ed Woodward will pay it. Like, literally.
Depends, who cares?
There's no two ways about it. But with Harry Maguire, it's like, yes, he's homegrown, he's 26. £90 million when other centre-backs are going for less, who are twice the player he is. You know, would I prefer Koulibaly at 28 years old at £110, £115 million? Probably. I mean, I think if Harry Maguire goes for £90 million United, it will be one of the worst signings ever.
You expect him to fix your defence,
but he's not good enough to do that.
No. Well, neither is the rest of your defence. Well, I don't know. Like, I think if you've got a Koulibaly or a Skriniar or something, then you're like, well, yeah, or De Ligt, then there's like an argument they do. Yeah.
And Barcelona are ready to get rid of Umtiti as well.
Skriniar has just signed a new long-term contract, I believe.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, they want Lukaku.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But again, that just drives up his value. You know, sure. United were potentially looking at Ruben Dias for 50-odd million. Mm. Now they've extended or upped his release clause to 88 million euros. Like, United are just used to, like, bend players over a barrel to get,
really,
like, better deals.
Frustrating as a United fan.
I mean, it's very frustrating in general to be a United fan. Historically, no, because United are just the kind of club who are like, we'll pay it. We'll just
yes,
pay it.
It doesn't really
but
matter.
But now that has come to the stage where, like, the fees are just so astronomical now that it does become an issue if you're starting to pay, like, 100 million quid for Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, seriously.
It's just ridiculous. Just offer the buyout for Alderweireld, though maybe they have and they've said no.
Well,
he's
the,
no.
The buyout's what, 25 million quid?
But yeah. Surely they must have done that, and he's been like,
I think he just must.
Yeah, yeah, he must just not want.
But
to
the thing is, why would he? At he's 30 now, just about to turn 30.
I think he is. Though,
why would he leave Spurs, who are definitely on the up? They're doing bits in this transfer market. Like, they look like a decent team. They reach a Champions League final, finish third. Why would he jump ship after those years at Spurs to go to United?
Because you'll give him a longer contract than he's got at Spurs for more money.
I mean, he would probably get a 4-year contract at $250,000 a week,
which is great. Which is great at 30 years old.
Yeah, but
like, don't get me wrong. Like, you want to win stuff, but you also want, like, your financial security for the next, like, 60 years.
Yeah. At the same time, are you going to be willing to come in the United team where the fans legitimately think you're going to transform their team, and then 3 weeks into the season realize that's not the case? And just absolutely lambast you from the stands for the remaining 35 games.
You could just hang out with, like, Alexis Sanchez and his dogs for the rest of the season.
The weirdest bloke in football.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah,
but his dogs are cute.
His dogs are cute, but he is one of the weirdest blokes.
I honestly think you're being really mean.
About his dogs? His dogs are fine. His dogs are lovely.
He seems like a really lovely boy.
I mean,
Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah.
He's everything substantially older than you.
Yeah.
Might have the mental age of someone much younger than
everything
you.
Everything he seems to do on social media, he's on his own.
No, like, he's never on his own. He's with his two great dogs.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Whoever's filming him,
his dogs,
and the two dogs.
Whoever is,
his dogs
that
are evidently the only people
who
can.
Is a nice person.
That's bollocks.
Right, anyway, a team we haven't mentioned is Barcelona. What have you been making of their action in the transfer window?
Getting Frankie de Jong over the line early was good business. Seems like a generational midfielder. Again, this kind of golden generation of Ajax kids coming through was, what, 68 million quid?
Yeah,
or so.
Pretty reasonable price, actually.
And a player that you would expect to stay at Barcelona for, you know, the majority or a large part of his career. Proven on international level, killed it in the Eredivisie. I think it's probably one of the best signings of the season. Beaten only perhaps by Eden Hazard because the fee was only 90 million quid, when in this market you're probably looking at 140 for a 28-year-old Hazard.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but you only need 1 year left.
No, I mean, I'm saying it's good for Madrid that they got him.
Oh,
for that.
I see.
You know,
right.
It's obviously horrendous for Chelsea.
But the problem with them is they just seem like they're doing weird stuff. Like, they
Barcelona.
Yeah. Like, they need a left back. They have not got one. And because they haven't got one for the last few seasons, they had to give Jordi Alba an enormous contract to keep him at the club. That's stupid. So they need that. Like, they're
spent,
like,
20 million on Neto.
And but also they sent Silesen the other way for, like, basically the same amount. Like, then they're like faffing about with their centre backs. Like, oh, we're not sure about Umtiti. Like, maybe we'll get De Ligt. Like, blah blah blah. I understand why you want De Ligt, but, like, sort out your forward line. Sort out. They could have gotten Rabiot on a free. They could have at the end of this window. They could have had a Rabiot, De Jong, Arthur midfield.
Have kind of done the business they should have done.
Well, yeah, to some extent. And, like, instead, it's like, are they going to go and try and get Neymar? You know, they now let
Dembele go.
Yeah, now supposedly they've put him on the market, right? This is according to, like, Mundo Deportivo, like, local paper saying they put him on the market for 100 mil. Or
Bild as well in Germany said that, like, they believe he's going to Bayern.
But then again,
good.
Dembele has this huge red flag about him, about his attitude, about how toxic he is.
Only at Barcelona.
But again, also the French national team. And
really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've read a couple of articles that he's not toxic, but like his attitude towards training and his effort and his like
maybe he
discipline.
Needs a bigger name manager.
I don't know though. Like you imagine Messi alongside you, kind of does the job of that manager. Mm. But and also like Kovac isn't that guy. But
yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, like he was perfectly fine with like Tuchel at Dortmund, and like he's been good in other places. Like and to a certain extent, there's also the part of me that's like, if you perform when you're on the pitch, you're available to play and you're fit. Mm-hmm. I actually don't care what you do the rest of the time. Like
yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like it might be annoying, and players might be annoyed by it, and maybe it doesn't wash at Barcelona where you're not the best player. But at another club, I'd be like, he'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll get away with
yeah, but
it.
Yeah. Has he been good enough to justify that?
Probably. Like I mean, when he basically gets a goal involvement every game he plays, I don't know. I think Ousmane Dembélé is just good enough to play for everyone.
Do you think that if they let Dembélé leave, that's a big mistake for the future of Barcelona?
Not if they're not going to play him. Like mm-hmm. if they're barely going to, there were a couple of times last season where he would have been perfect. If they played yeah. him in the second leg against Liverpool at Anfield, mm-hmm. I think they'd have gone through. Like if they'd yeah. had that pace, like yeah. playing on the counter, because they're not actually a fast team.
No.
Like so. No. But if you're not going to pay him, you can't just have like a 100 million euro plus asset sitting on the bench. And if you can use him as a chip to try and get, you know, the idea of like trying to swap him and Coutinho for Neymar back, it's like, would I do that? Probably not. But like, if you're not really going to play Coutinho and not really going to play Dembélé, then like, sure, why not? Who cares? Like, I don't know. It just feels like that they've just got somebody rotting and they're yeah. getting absolutely no value out of it. And Barcelona yeah. have spent a lot of money recently.
Yeah. I mean, how can you miss something you don't use?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, Griezmann's also been touted to be announced this week at 110 odd million pounds.
I would not do that either.
Why?
Because he's too old and he doesn't fit their needs. Like, their needs are a guy who can play off the left and in the long... what they want is a guy who can play off the left, and they also need somebody who in the long term can be Suarez.
Yeah, you need
a
Suarez,
right?
But sure, Griezmann,
like
Griezmann's
Dybala
not either of those
like
things.
That.
Well, maybe, like, but Griezmann just isn't those things. Like, Griezmann doesn't really play as a centre forward, certainly not on his own. Like, he wants to play in the hole or off the right. Well, yeah. the guy playing up front at the moment is Suarez. The guy playing in the hole and off the right is Messi. Like, and Griezmann's 28, so it's not like he's a long term fix. Like, the perfect guy for Barcelona would have been Mbappe, right? Like a few
yeah.
years ago, play Mbappe off the left. Like, then you have Mbappe, Suarez, Messi,
yeah, but the same
and then
time,
Mbappe becomes the centre
you
forward.
You could say Mbappe's pretty much the perfect guy for any team in the world.
But I think he fitted Barcelona more than yeah. almost anybody else. And Barcelona had the money and the space for him. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. They just need a guy who can, like, who can fill that left wing slot. And it feels like I'd even go for a Mane over a Griezmann. Because he fits their needs better. And it's not just about who's the better player. It's about who fits your needs more.
So, Pete, what do you make of the potential Neymar returning to Barcelona story?
I don't really know, to be honest, because I don't really like Neymar, to be honest. So, yeah. I do you want to see him do
what?
I mean,
he's just
such a wee rat.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's fairly well known that he is an interesting character. Let's say that.
Yeah.
He's gone to PSG. He went to PSG to be the big name, like to get out of Messi's shadow essentially and be that icon of the team. Then Mbappe's come along and everybody's quickly realised
yeah.
that Mbappe's actually just a better player than him.
Which is
and
really
also a nicer bloke. So him and his ego, I think, could come back traipsing to Barcelona with his tail between his legs. And I'd be absolutely fine with it, to be honest. I don't really care that much about Mbappe or about Neymar's future.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, it's just,
I don't even think about him
what
anymore.
What about
Coutinho? He's actually in my, like, not necessarily in my rating, but just like on my radar, just dropped off it.
Where
yeah.
do you
in terms
see
of like
Coutinho
the best players
going?
In the world. Yeah, I
kind of needs to leave.
The thing
Barcelona,
is, right, yeah, he needs to leave Barcelona.
Especially if they want to get in a big signing like Neymar.
But he's also like the issue with Coutinho is he's a luxury player that no one's going to spend what Barca will value him at.
Yep.
Chelsea would have been the one.
Yeah.
Chelsea would have been the place. And like,
you think they spent 130 odd million?
With Eden Hazard going, maybe,
yeah.
maybe.
Like,
what just as a desperate need to fill that creative hole?
Yeah, basically, like, okay, we're going to lose Hazard. Maybe if we can just pretty much real terms swap him for Coutinho,
yeah.
essentially, like that is as good a replacement as we'll get. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a downgrade for more money, but again, it's better than who they're going to play there.
And he's younger, at least. Kovacic. And, like, you know, it means that you're competitive for the Champions League, whereas I don't know if they are without him.
While we're on the topic of transfers, Patrick, I'd like your opinion on Wilfried Zaha to Arsenal.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the BBC reported that Crystal Palace are now incensed by the Gunners' approach for their winger. They've offered £40 million, but Palace value him more at 80.
I don't care.
Also, I read that it was £40 million in installments.
Yeah, but it's always in installments, right? You never pay a transfer fee up front, but unless it's a buyout.
Yeah, but I mean, £40 million over what, like 4 years?
I think they said they wanted it to be something like 20 this year, 20 next year, and then like 5 in bonuses the year after.
But it gets a bit difficult because of the Aaron Wan-Bissaka fee. People are now claiming he's worth so much more.
Yeah, I don't get that either. Like, they're just different commodities. Yeah. Like Wan-Bissaka to me is a much rarer commodity, like a top-class right-back who's homegrown and 21.
Talent, yeah.
Whereas Zaha is 26, he's at his peak, he's a great dribbler. Yeah. That's basically it.
But yeah, his creative numbers aren't great.
But he's so vital to Palace. Do you think they're just...
Yeah, he's worth more to Palace than he's ever worth to anybody.
But that doesn't mean he's worth more financially to Arsenal.
Exactly.
Does it?
Yeah. Like to Arsenal, I don't think 40 million, everyone's saying it's ridiculous. And it is ridiculous to bid it unless you basically want to say, provoke Palace into saying what we want is like 90 million. And then you can say to your fans, they wanted 90 million. And the fans are like, well, they did try. Like, I think that... I think that what he's actually worth on the market is probably about 45-50.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's worth to Palace is like almost impossible to put a value on because he's their whole attack.
And they sit firmly in the driving seat because he signed that 5-year deal last year.
Yeah, if he wants to leave so much, like his brother says, he shouldn't keep signing 5-year deals. Like, it's not going to happen. He'll probably never leave now.
Well, the thing is, it was stupid for him to sign that deal because... I'm not sure what he's on per week, but it won't be that much at Palace.
It's 130k.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, he could have got more.
He could have got more.
But on the other hand, you say that now, but like, say he'd broken his leg or like his career had ended, like somehow, say if he'd broken his leg and he was currently just out injured for like a year, then we'd be like, oh, maybe it's not that dumb. But because it's like now he wants to go to a top six club. I don't know.
But the thing is, his aspirations were always there. And he's been good at Palace. So, I mean, why would he not be looking to move up? So why would he sign a 5-year contract at a team it's like quicksand, he's just slowly sinking.
But I think players are going to become a bit savvier with these mid-table Premier League clubs like Leicester, Palace, Wolves, Everton. People are going to realise that if you sign a long-term contract with those clubs, you've got to be prepared to be at that club until the last year of your contract and never sign a new one while you're there.
But I also think a... team like Wolves or Leicester are considerably different to a team like Palace in terms of their project.
I suppose like they might be willing to take the money.
But like to be fair, if I was Wilfried Zaha, he would probably be more willing to play at Wolves for 5 years than he would at Palace.
Sure. I mean, I guess the thing is, if I were running Palace and I could get like 60 mil plus for Zaha, I would take it and turn around my 110 mil or whatever for Wan-Bissaka and Zaha. Yeah. And I think, and everyone says, like, oh, if Zaha goes, they get relegated. Yeah, if Zaha goes and they don't buy anyone. But if Zaha goes and they buy, like, 3 players and a good right back to replace Wan-Bissaka, I think they're fine. I think they're still totally competitive. Like, so, but this is the thing, like, if you build a team where you're totally reliant on one player, at some point you will get relegated because they'll either age out or they'll get injured.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn that player into 3 or 4. This is how Leicester are starting to do it. Like, Leicester have sold some players and they've gradually turned that side into an amazing young team.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see, say he does leave and does go to the Emirates, where do you see Zaha fitting into the Arsenal team?
I think he'd play on the right. Like, mm-hmm. he played mostly on the left last season, but he's not going to play up front, which is where he's been at his best, which was 2017-18. I think on the left, he's going to want to cut inside and create, and he's not actually that good a creator. And you don't want him cutting inside because there are too many people trying to be.
And also,
anyway,
if you look at the shot locations, they're like very, rarely central.
They're always wide.
He never really takes shots from the centre of the pitch.
And I don't really want him to take shots. If I were Arsenal and I were in charge of the team now, I would want him playing on the right, and my aim with him would be using his dribbling ability to get essentially to the byline and get pullbacks. Because if he gets to the byline and gets pullbacks and you've got Lacazette and Aubameyang in the box, you're going to score a load of goals. Yeah. He's never played with an elite striker.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Yeah, that would probably be my idea, especially seeing as like Iwobi can't really play on the right. He's much better on the left. And actually, when it comes to being a playmaker, people don't like to hear it, but Iwobi is infinitely superior as a creator. Actually, Iwobi's better in end product altogether. Like Iwobi,
Zaha.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that Zaha's entire—he's just entirely falls down in terms of creation. Like he all he is
wins
fast,
and
he, yeah, well, he won like five last season.
They ended up with like 10 yeah. pens in the league.
But his dribbling attributes are immense.
Yeah, he's incredible at that, and I think it's absolutely right that Arsenal should be targeting a wide dribbler, and that's why I'd play him on the right, because like you want him to use that dribbling, like to get past players and whip the ball in, as opposed to you beat like six guys and try and get off like a half chance. Like at a big club, it can't work that way. But I think that rather than spend 60 mil on Zaha, you can spend 30 mil on Chukwueze. You can spend 30 mil on Steven Bergwijn. Like there are players, or Leon Bailey, you know, you could probably get for maybe 50. Like there are players you can get who are much young. If Zaha were 22, 23 and had the space to grow into a better player, I would be up for it. But he's 26. This is what he is. Mm-hmm. And I think he'd be better at Arsenal, but not by a lot.
So you're saying no to Zaha to Arsenal?
Absolutely.
But then again, Zaha at 80 million, I think, is tantamount to Harry Maguire at 90.
Yes.
So just to round this up,
overpriced.
Who has had the best transfer window so far?
I mean, I personally think it's hard to look past. Real Madrid, and just the amount of money they spent. They've gone like full Galactico. Luka Jovic seems like an unbelievable talent. They've got Hazard, who I think will just run riot in La Liga. And Juve, yeah, good. Done classic Juventus business, getting a lot of frees in.
Juve have also sold 98 million euros worth. And none of them are to direct competitors.
Oh my God, what? They've brought in some really good young players as well. They've got in Christian Romero, like the centre back from Genoa. They spent a fortune on that. They obviously Rabiot on a free. Yeah. Like they've got in Luca Pellegrini out of, you know, who he's a very
22 million.
Yeah, but he's a very young left back, and he's barely played for Roma. But to send Spinazzola the other way and get Luca Pellegrini is pretty good business. Yeah. So I think that they're doing the right thing, which is rejuvenating their squad.
So we are saying Juve and Real.
Yeah. The
game's gone mad. Let's move on to our second topic, which is the Women's World Cup. The Lionesses were knocked out of the World Cup last night in the semis against the USA after Ellen White had a goal ruled out by VAR for being offside, and Steph Houghton also missed a very late penalty, had it saved by the USA keeper. But what have you made of the tournament as a whole?
Who are you coming to?
You, Patrick.
Yeah, I've actually missed most of it because I've been on holiday, but you know.
Part-time Pete's been on holiday. Part-time Pete's been on holiday.
I did watch last night's game though.
I watched a bit of last night's game. To be honest, I haven't seen much of the tournament. I found VAR to be moderately annoying at this tournament, but the Netherlands are great, which is amazing. I mean, what's it frustrating?
Their semi-final is tonight.
Yeah, against Sweden. Mm-hmm. And it would be really nice. It would be really nice. And Mia Dame, like, there are so many great players, like, you know, Martins, Mia Dame, and like, it would be lovely to see the Netherlands get to the final, though it's hard to see anybody beating the USA. But I think that's one of my frustrations, actually, the USA, because they looked really amazing in the groups, like playing a kind of possessing counter press like style midfield. And then as they've got into the knockout stages, they've got really risk averse and they've played like much more conservative,
like half court for 60, 70 minutes of that game.
That's not what you want to see. You're like, when you're the best team in the world, act like it. And I know that the idea is when you win a title, no one cares. And that's true. But I would love to see a side that honestly has like five or six of the best players in the world, of like the 10 best players in the world. Like, I would love to see them like play to their full potential, which to me means opening the taps and just saying we will dominate whoever we come up
against.
But
at the same time, it kind of worked for them last night in that England looked pretty good playing the ball out from the back. They were like happy to get through their press. But by the time they got to the final third, that defence was so structured and so like tightly packed, there was nowhere for them to go.
Yeah. And it was just Lucy Bronze as well. Like you're relying on Lucy Bronze so much.
Yeah.
Like, which is why I think the idea was that like Kristen Press would kind of like keep her back and stuff.
Yeah.
But then obviously she was at fault for that goal.
Second first goal.
Which is a tremendous header, by the way. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
Like, Bronze goes to sleep, but there were good goals in the game, and like, and some of the goals from the tournament. I always like watching Japan, actually. Like, Japan's women's team I think, play some of the most aesthetically pleasing football. Like, they're really entertaining to watch. Like, they again scored a great team goal at this World Cup, having scored what I thought was the goal of the last World Cup, which was another great team goal. Like, so I think it's been a really good tournament, but to me, I think I just hope that afterwards the abiding message of it is like Ada Hegerberg, like trying to get, sitting it out to try and get like equal pay for women's national teams.
Fair treatment as well. Just like respect for the national team. She said she wanted like training to be taken seriously. She's not it's not asking for much.
But that's the thing, like what we've learned with this World Cup is that like women being reasonable will always be called shrill. Like it literally happens time and time again, and women like celebrating are seen as like bitches or something, like rather than like
with massive egos.
On that note, what did you make of the sipping tea celebration
from Alex Morgan?
Yeah.
I mean, it's topical. Kind of rate it. You know, you've got to rate a shithousen. She scored. She did a tea celebration against England.
I think it's ridiculous that it's caused so much.
I'm pretty sure I saw something on Twitter last night saying that it's launched a war.
At the same time, imagine if you did an equivalent thing. Like, say for instance, one of the Americans cried during the national anthem, which would be like a fucking super American.
To be fair, how do you celebrate an NHS?
Imagine if like England had scored and they just went over to like an American player like cried during the national anthem and like pretended to cry like in front of them. I guarantee Americans would be kicking off about it.
But that's not the same.
It's just a joke.
But that's my thing. Like everybody's like fine with a joke when it's not at their expense. Like I think this is a perfectly good joke. Like,
yeah, I agree.
But all the people who are like, why can't people take a joke? I'm kind of like, no one in football can really do that.
I also think, though, like British people pride themselves on being able to take a joke, and quite clearly they can't.
It's because of women, Olivia.
But also, I think
They can't take jokes.
I think
maybe it was their time of the month or something.
Oh my god!
You know that week of the month where you don't take jokes.
Yeah, it was definitely in that week.
Ridiculous. I'm amazed Piers Morgan hasn't offered that theory yet.
I think it's also part down to the fact that the US women's team are so good. They're so dominant that everyone hates them because they're good, like United of the 90s.
Like when they scored, what was it?
Yeah, 13 goals against Thailand.
And I did agree, though, that I don't think you should celebrate your 13th goal. But people were up in arms about that.
Oh, but the thing is, I think it's just enshrined enshrined into that team and that like mentality, because Hope Solo was one of the pundits last night. And she was like, oh, we're a team of winners. It's like everything was about winning. She was just like always brought it back to that winning mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I think they're the kind of team that would like kick a baby if it meant.
I think they're just American. They're just deeply American.
I mean,
Americans don't care about participation. Like Americans, America.
I like that mindset, though.
Yeah, but America is also like,
I don't want to generalize that much, but I kind of agree with you.
Yeah. what this result actually shows is like the disparity in investment in women's football across the world.
No, it literally is.
Like,
because again, in a sport that is gradually becoming more elite and more professional, money and infrastructure go so far.
Yeah,
you know, if you look at the wages that obviously like, America have this huge infrastructure of like college sports, and it's massively funded. More women in college play football than men, so there's more soccer, there's more college soccer players who are female than men in America. So obviously that's going to have a production line of just elite players. And I think if you look at the money they're earning, like the max representative figures overall for England were $65K. That's the max reported figure.
Jesus.
Whereas for USA, it was 133K.
Wow.
However, I read a Times article that said 88% of the women's Super League in England earn less than 18K a year. So the max fee for them, just by their league fee, is 35K. But 88% of them are on 18 grand or less. Bearing in mind, minimum wage at like 8.50 on a 37.5-hour week gets you like 15, 16 grand.
God.
So these elite athletes are earning like $2,000.
It means you have to have another job as well if you're playing.
I mean, I'm not sure the percentages of how many women have like ended up giving up football, or I'm pretty sure most of them have considered being like, I can't make this work.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also, if you take into account how much they're sacrificing as well, because they also are putting off having families for this, and they're not getting reimbursed for that. Like, if say you play till you're 30, 31, you're going to have maybe two kids instead of four.
I think they tend to play later as well.
Yeah.
Like in women's football.
Well, I mean, if you look
a lot at, of it, when you look at the quality, yeah. like there's a lot of the top players are well into their 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think only one of the starting England team was under 25 last night.
Really?
I think. But yeah, so it's like a male player can have a family anytime he wants. You know, they can just pop up kids. So like they're making
sometimes when he doesn't want.
Yeah, so they're making these huge sacrifices for what is a stone's throw away from minimum wage for 88% of the women's soccer league.
But so last night for the semi-final, it was the most watched TV program of the year.
Was it?
Yeah,
it I saw that was 11 something million.
11.7 million watched
the
games
most of the year
on the BBC. The most of the year, the Champions League final got 11.3. million.
Right. To be fair,
I know it's on terrestrial.
Yeah, yeah. Well. But to be fair, I think it actually shows how much this Lioness team's captured the spirit, like
the tournament as a whole.
Yeah,
I think people have been like, I've gone into pubs and seen it on the TV. I've never seen that with women's football before.
They've captured like the minds of.
Do you think this can be
fans.
Considered a turning point?
Wait, I mean, last night, my girlfriend texted me being like, "Can we watch football tonight?" She's never said that in her life. And we put off Love Island
really nice.
Till plus one.
Whoa.
So like we watched football and then we watched Love Island on plus one.
And what like, an excellent evening.
That it's now tapping into like a new demographic.
A new audience, and
like, yeah. Yeah, and people who hate like the established football culture like can get behind something in like women's football without feeling like they're participating in like quite a horrible world.
It seems that it's a much more accessible atmosphere. Like you look at the crowds and all and they look happy. Like they're in the crowd, even if they're losing, they're cheering and they look happy. Whereas, like, if you go to a lot of like male top level football matches, they're just aggressive,
angry.
Also, the women don't cover their mouths when they say things to the ref.
Yeah.
Which, like, so there's. Have you seen the video of Alex Morgan?
No.
Like, she like fouled somebody. I think it was in a group stage game, and like the ref goes over and like Alex Morgan just says to her so clearly, she goes, "She dived. She's faking." Like, it's really cute, and she like keeps miming diving and just like she's fake. I love it. It's so great. Whereas I hate the way that like footballers cover their mouths when they talk. It's like, no, I want to hear what you're saying.
I want to quickly move on though to Megan Rapinoe
mm-hmm.
for the role she's played in, not just on the pitch. I actually would rather talk about what she's doing off the pitch. What do you make of her voice of protest throughout the tournament, Pete?
What, in terms of the executive leadership in America?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's great that people and sports people, etc., are getting more and more involved in politics because they are in such positions of power and influence, more so in terms of influence than politicians often are because they have a bigger fan base.
Yeah.
They're a lot more relevant and in the public eye. So I think it's great that she is shedding more light on the severe issues that do exist in America at this time. You know, there's whether you support Trump or not is irrelevant. There is some huge discrimination going on and I don't really see how you can deny it, and the fact that like Elizabeth concentration camp exists in 2019, like a concentration camp for migrants exists in 2019 after not even just like World War II, you have like Cambodia, Pol Pot, there's so many previous regimes that have shown that it's just horrible and unacceptable. How can this still exist in such a developed society? So yeah, I think it's amazing that she's taken a stand, as some other sports people have, and she was trending on Twitter. Her reach was huge when she made those comments that they wouldn't be invited to the White House or she wouldn't go to the White House. So it's creating conversations that might not have been had if she had not made those comments, which is always a good thing.
Yeah,
it fuels a debate. Also, Ellen White is now the second highest scorer for England.
Yeah, after Gary Lineker. Yeah, she's got one more than Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to headlines. Now, I haven't actually got that many because most of them are transfer talking base. We've already covered that. So I want to start with the biggest news of the week, which is obviously
too.
Hector Bellerin and his new haircut.
Right. Oh, God.
What do you make of it?
I accidentally saw this morning.
Oh my God, where have you been?
I know, I don't know how it didn't come on my radar, but saw a few retweets from other Football Daily people. And to be honest, I'm not really rating it. I'm not a fan. I think I just
love it.
I loved his long hair. Like, he was just, he was like a musketeer.
I'd had enough
it
of
was
it.
Like, oh.
Yeah,
that,
I think I'd had enough
no,
of it.
Like, every picture he had when he had that hair, he looked like it was 1975 with his wee moustache. Like, I actually went
especially
out.
Especially when he's with Ainsley Maitland-Niles, yeah. He also looks like he's from the 70s.
I went out and bought Mundial because he was on the cover of it, and I support United. So, like, I really rate, like, his just his fashion, his hair. He's just a good bloke.
He's so cool, isn't he?
Yeah, he's cute.
But I prefer his long hair. Home.
I just love it.
Love Shoreditch.
I just love how like how yeah, Londonese
I,
he's
I
always sounded.
Yeah, like him in the new Adidas.
It's
Arsenal
so good. Yeah.
It's so
yeah.
good.
Like they have to dub everyone except Bellerin, who actually just sounds like he's yeah. from North
but,
London.
But like when we were playing sevens in the old pitch out at Shoreditch, we was went to Box Park afterwards for a few beers.
Yeah.
Hector Bellerin's just sitting there.
So cool.
Just yeah, I think he was actually drinking water, but his mates were drinking pints, and he was just sitting there like you know the way they have essentially just big long. Tables
yeah, yeah.
with benches. He was just sitting like in the middle of it. A couple of people kept coming up to him asking for photos. He was like, yeah, cool. He was just in Box Park in Shoreditch, just living like a normal Londoner. He is
more
cute.
Of a Londoner than all of us
what,
together.
You prefer it? Do you like it, Olivia?
What, his new hair?
His new do?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I didn't really like it long. I'm not so keen this, on it now. I think I preferred it back in the day when he was
this
like 18.
Thing. I think he has gone halfway
he has an
there.
Excellent
this
hairline,
the
doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's gone halfway. So he had long hair, which is great. He had short hair, which is great. Now he's got this kind of like weird bob where he looks like that woman from the.
He's got Megan Rapinoe's hair.
No. He looks like that bird from The Incredibles who makes the suits.
Edna Mode.
Yeah. He's got that kind of vibe. It's almost like a bob.
I know what you mean.
If it grows out another like
good.
Couple of inches. Yeah, the thing is, he makes it look good because he's a fit bloke.
I think it's just that Hector Bellerin has excellent chat. Like the fact he just tweeted that emoji the day before he got his haircut, and everyone was like, "Oh, is he saying time's out at Arsenal? Oh my God, is he going to move?" And it was like, "No, it was time for
also,
haircut."
He
oh,
also
it's so good.
He also liked a tweet that somebody put up where it was just like, "Oh, you know, 4 years ago, Tanguy Ndombele was playing in like the fourth division of like yeah. French football," and an Arsenal fan had quote tweeted this saying like, "Wow, that's really some decline for him." And Hector Bellerin liked it.
Love
I was
that.
Like, "He's so cute."
Right, on that note, I think we should move on to anything but football because we haven't got much time left in the day.
No, we've actually been down here for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's yeah. been quite a lot.
I've saved that image, by the way, to my phone now from that video of Sead Kolasinac saying, "Yes, my G." Only not actually saying it. Like, it's so, it just makes me happy. And I'm just going to send it to everyone from now on. I sent it to Emma last night. It's good.
To be fair, they absolutely nailed it with that ad.
It's good
so
ad.
Good, isn't
and
it?
And their kit is so
yeah,
nice.
It's yeah, great.
Righty is really cute in it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
He's turned into a little dad.
Right, so anything but football. Very quickly, I've got three options. I've brought back the options because I've been a bit more dictatory the last couple of weeks.
Sure.
Option number one is Wimbledon. It has started.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Tennis.
Into it.
Sure. But yeah. Option two.
Glastonbury.
No.
Specifically Alex.
I don't really know anything about this. I haven't watched any Glastonbury.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, so
the kid
got
up
yeah,
the kid likes with, Thiago Silva, right?
Yeah.
And then like it turns out he hates gay people.
What?
Yeah, I mean...
They found his old tweets.
Lemmy's cancelled him.
Yeah.
Right, so that moves us on to our third topic, which is Love Island. And
Love
I
Island.
Actually tweeted asking for people's suggestions, and loads of people have asked for Love Island. So I assumed everyone just hated this section, but I think they're here for it.
All right, let's do it. Love Island.
Love Island.
What's there to talk about?
So recently they went into Casa Amor, and a lot of people had, in Love Island speak, had their heads turned.
I've got to be honest, I only half watched this show, and so some episodes I've seen like every second... And then I hadn't seen much in the last couple of weeks. So people hate people from it, and I don't know why they hate them. Like George hates Anna.
To be fair, I'm fairly invested in the show, so much so that I came back at 5 a.m. on the first night of a stag do and watched it on my phone.
Wow.
That actually sounds
to the extent where like I was struggling to see the phone, but I still made the effort.
That's because it's just like televised cruelty.
Yeah.
It's like bear based.
No, it's just judgment.
Let's talk about, let's say, Michael and Amber were coupled up from the beginning. Everyone was like, money is on them to win the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
And then Amber left for Casa Amor and all the new boys.
Mm-hmm.
Michael has had his head turned by very stunning Joanna.
She is very stunning.
Fair enough as well, because Amber is an idiot.
I think that's harsh.
No, she's so irritating. She's so immature.
I like her.
The best bit was when he was like, talking about how he was like, well, you know, like I've got to explore things, you know, if I like somebody else. And he said, I'm sure Amber will understand. It was like, have you met this girl? She's the least reasonable woman in the world.
She's incredibly petty.
Yeah, she's just a child.
It really highlights how differently men and women think about things, though, because all the men were like, well, this might upset them, but I've got to realise this show is about me. I came in by myself and I think this.
Not here to make friends.
Whereas,
I'm
like,
a big fan of that attitude.
Yeah.
I just don't think women think like that.
That's the thing. I think...
Men,
well,
they were just lying, though, do you not think, the men? Like, where the men kept saying stuff like, I've got to be true to myself. And you're like,
no.
Don't pretend this is some sort of self-actualization as opposed to, they all came in bikinis. I thought that one was hot. I don't want to sit here for 5 days and not hook
you're
up
not
with
You're not finding yourself in Casa Amor.
Exactly.
I have no issue with it, to be honest, because
you two are
trash.
No,
we're not trash. But
we're not trash.
But look at it. Look at it from the outside.
You always tell me men are trash.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, men are. Yeah. Men are trash. At least we have perspective.
Exactly.
But the thing is, if you look at the perspective of the entire show, if you come in and couple up on day one, the maximum length of time you can be with that girl is 8 weeks. Right. I've left milk in my fridge longer than that. So how can you be coming out being like, oh, I'm in love with you, let's move in together, we're going to start a life.
I think when you're in there, it's just so different.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more intense in there. But at the same time, Amy, what's her name?
Amy.
Yeah, not Amy.
Amber.
Amber.
Oh, God, that old song.
They're all A's. And they're all horrible. To me, she just comes across as a bit of a brat.
Yeah.
You know, she thinks she's amazing. And to be honest, I thought she was really... I really liked it when she came in. But she's just gradually, like, chipped away at me, and now I'm kind of getting irritated by her. And I do think Michael was telling the truth when he said that he was walking on eggshells. He was changing the way he phrased things or the way he was acting around her, so not to set her off.
Quickly, what about Curtis and Amy?
Oh,
Amy is...
Right, this is the thing. I loved the way he sat down Jordana and, like, talked at her, being like, I really like you, you've turned my head. Without actually, like, even thinking if she was into it.
He never even thought there was a possibility she might not be. And she was just sat there like, I don't... What?
Like, she looks so awkward being like...
She was really nice about it.
Yeah, she was lovely about it, but she was like...
She was so sweet.
She's a dick.
She spent...
I think you should be loyal.
She's gross.
She spent the... No, she's a dick.
No, I don't mean looks-wise. She's just a dick.
All right. Why?
Because it just felt so fake as well. I was just like, yeah, this is upping your likability, like, quota. And also then when they were actually doing the recoupling, like, her makeup was terrible. Like her face was just like, it didn't look like a human face.
You don't like her because what she did made her more likable.
I felt like she's
what
trying.
Happens
I felt
in
like
brain.
She's just like, you're like, oh, she was really nice about it. But I think the reason she was nice about it is because she was just like, this is an opportunity.
But it is a game show.
Does anything in
it's a game show.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't mean... But if I see through it, I can be like, you're fake.
I thought it was absolutely savage the way they edited it. Where
sick.
Curtis was having this conversation, being like,
so
I really
awful.
Want to crack on with you. You've turned my head. You know, there's obviously something missing with me and Amy. Cuts to her in like the diary room, and she's like, oh, I love him. I miss him. I'm going to tell him I love him when it comes back.
Curtis is my first true love.
Do you not think that they're brutal? I feel like those two storylines have like perfectly encapsulated like two very male issues. So, like, the first one, Michael and Amber, is when a man tells himself that actually he has more of a connection with a girl than he does because he thinks she's hot. That was the Amber Michael thing. So he overlooked all these problems for a long time because he was like, she's just hot and I want to hook up with her.
Yeah.
The Curtis and Amy thing is when a man suspects that he's a dick and decides that he's going to try and be a better man by dating a girl he would never normally date and by being like good to her. And then eventually it all falls apart because you don't actually have the tolerance to keep it going for long enough. And everyone's done both of these two things, and now... What you're seeing in that show is a glimpse into the male psyche.
Today we have learnt that Real Madrid have had a good transfer window, that a Women's World Cup is hopefully positive steps for female football, and
men are trash.
Yeah. It's been an education.
We could have skipped the half hour, to be honest.
Yeah.
But thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you aren't offended by us saying men are trash.
Whatever.
But
I mean, we say it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Men know.
They
spend their entire life trying to hide it.
That's why they like defend themselves so vigorously, because you never argue more vigorously than when you know you're in the wrong.
Yeah. Also, if you knew what went on in a man's head, you would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to know.
You really don't.
You don't.
It's a cesspit.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.